Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Twice a week, we interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how to break through the noise and capture the audience's attention. Today's guest is Jalen Bledsoe. Jalen is the CEO and founder of Bledsoe Collective, an innovative media and communications company.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be a part of this conversation.
So Jalen, you know, today's conversation, I really wanted to focus around cancel culture. It's been a big topic in the media with, you know, all these brands, all these creators getting canceled. You know, first off, can you talk about, you know, what cancel culture is?
Yeah, really, I think it's really simple. When a brand does something that the mass does not like, or a significant portion of an audience doesn't like, they cancel them with a quickness. You know, the power of Twitter, obviously the power of Black Twitter even more so, is a machine in itself. And so when a brand does not consider all sides of a conversation and they speak too early or they speak too soon, sometimes they end up canceled. And there's a mass exodus of boycotting and things of that nature around the brand.
So, you know, a lot of your marketing efforts and focus is working with companies and brands on, you know, advertising to people of color. What suggestions do you have when you start working with a brand on, you know, these are things you should be aware of, these are things that are important to keep track of so, you know, they don't get canceled?
You definitely. Yeah, so, you know, one of the cool things, I think, first and foremost, our brand as a business, we get to work with a lot of clients. You know, rather it's your AT&T's of the world or your Ford's or your mom and pop shops, all from the conversation of how to be authentic, how to be relational, and how to build true engagement with audience. And that just happens to be in this season that we're in with, you know, people of color as the target audience. And I think the reason that this is a space, when we think about most commercials or most advertising campaigns, they're built with people who don't look like me in the room. And so all of those beliefs about what we do, how we live, what makes us happy, either their personal experiences make that commercial what it is, or they go the aspect of stereotype. And it's okay, great, how do we, you know, act like we're in a Black neighborhood? Or how do we build something around a Black person? And so I think the reason we go after the targeted marketing, your non-general market, is so that we can build commercials that are authentically engaging with the audience who's receiving them. And so if I put a commercial on BET, you know, for example, as a brand, it would be kind of, blind. It would be, you know, irresponsible to do a commercial where there's no one Black in it airing on BET, right? And unfortunately, that's what most of our general market commercials are. There are those that don't represent the actual population of America, and they're generally majority white at this point in time.
So I know you served on an advisory board for AT&T, and you know, I think things like cell phone products, it doesn't seem something that could be so controversial. But to your point, you know, there's these hidden biases that exist where, you know, AT&T might be doing an advertisement and they're not, you know, equally representing people. So in the case of, you know, a company like that, and you don't have to speak specifics about AT&T, you know, what are the things that brands need to be aware of when they're, you know, running these advertisements so they're being proactive on these issues?
I think the most important thing is asking yourself, who's at the table when we're having this conversation? When we're planning the creatives around this campaign, who's at the table? And are they empowered to speak up as everyone else at the table is? When you think about, you know, building a commercial or a campaign, I'm naturally going to speak from my experience. I'm naturally going to speak from what I know, what I've seen, what I believe to be true. And so if that voice who doesn't understand what happens in a Black community or an Asian community or whatever that might be isn't at the table, we begin to speak from a place of stereotype. So the reason you want to have someone who is actually from that community actively engaged as a part of an equal at that table is so they can speak up, so they can help create and drive the dialogue where it needs to go to be authentic and truly, you know, accurate.
Really great answer. You know, can you talk about what brands are really good at, not just marketing, you know, to white people, but marketing to everyone, and do a really good job at being inclusive in their practices?
Well, you know, the funniest brand out of all of them is Ben & Jerry's. They're like, we don't care what might come back and bite us in the butt later when it comes to, like, we're going to be open and honest about where we are as in a country. And so they're really upfront about it. AT&T is becoming a lot better at it. You know, they have commitments around and mandates that pretty much say every commercial has to be diversely casted, general market. I think as we see more brands do that, and think about how do we ensure that every commercial, beyond just our black commercials, have black people in it. Beyond our Asian commercials, have Asians in them. That helps push this dialogue further. It helps this all make sense.
Yeah, so, you know, I want to touch on that more, but do you think it's also important to continue to segregate marketing in that there should continue to be advertisements towards certain demographics? Or do you think marketing efforts in general should just try to be more inclusive?
You know, I wouldn't say segregation first. I would say segmenting. It's how do we hyper-target this audience? Because when you think about, you know, a general market campaign, again, at scale, you know, there really isn't, you know, a white channel, right? The white channels are all the ones that are general market. Your Fox, your ABCs, your whatever, generally those are your white platforms. And so the only reason I believe that we create commercials that are fully segmented is so that we can meet those people, meet black people, meet Asians, wherever, in the space that they're watching and make it comfortable for them to engage. And that's the time where let's go, you know, all in. Let's go fully segmented. Let's go fully authentic to that culture. But if we decide at general market to make every commercial representative, we wouldn't ever need, again, to have segmented, you know, communications. But until we get to that point, we're going to have to do this.
Yeah, so one of the things, you know, you touched on Ben and Jerry's. Ben and Jerry's, before all the brands were jumping on the Juneteenth bandwagon, they were doing it before, right? They were being authentic about it. They were like, this should be a holiday. You know, when should brands decide, like, okay, we should do this? Like, how do you make sure it's incorporated that authenticity? Because clearly a lot of these brands were doing it for the wrong reason, while Ben and Jerry's was doing it for the right reason. How do you work in that you're doing it for the right reasons and that you're making sure and you're leading those efforts to be inclusive for out of authenticity, not just because everyone's doing it?
Well, the reality of it is, you know, and I always ask the question, you know, you've posted the black box, now what? What's next? But the important thing is, what are you doing inside your company that validates that external message you're about to put out? So before you go out and say, hey, we believe that Black Lives Matter, do you believe culturally within your organization that they matter? Are they empowered? Are they employed? Are they executives? Are they represented? Like, is that part of the conversation? I laughed recently. I was reading an article yesterday about Ellen DeGeneres. And the whole idea was, she's really big on be kind, America, be kind, world, let's take care of everybody. But a lot of her employees are upset about how they've not been treated, you know, fairly, both A, in COVID, but also B, over time. And so you look at that and it's like, you know, what happens in private will bleed out, whether that's good or bad. And so we can create whatever, you know, facade we want to create and say, we're great, we're for the people. But if you have people that work for you who don't believe that's the culture you have internally, that's what's going to come out, and that's what's going to have you canceled as a brand.
So, you know, talking about Ellen, let's just use her as an example, and potentially she may or may not get canceled. If, you know, you were consulting someone like Ellen, what suggestions would you have for them in that they made mistakes in the past? How should they go about correcting them and coming to a place where it comes off as authentic and not just, I made a faux pas, and I want to, you know, continue to rein in my money.
Definitely. You know, the first thing, which I think it's the very PR thing, right? It's first taking a beat to listen to your team. So before you put out a post and say, I'm sorry, take a second and bring in the team and have the conversation now via Zoom. I want to understand why it is that you're feeling this way. Help us understand, how do we become better? And don't do this for the simple fact of saying we did it and it's a checkbox. It's for the simple fact of, I really do want to learn. I want to understand. I want to grow from the mistakes we've made as an organization or as a talent. Once you do that, yes, go out and make a public statement. Hey, we've had conversations internally. I took a second to respond because I want to fully understand what was happening. And here are five fixes we're going to make to fix this problem. One of those things, you know, I'd say it was pretty generic, would be having some type of culture committee or a diversity committee, or whatever that might be, of a few of your team members, your employees, not your executives, but your employees who are being, you know, in a room with executives to share, you know, from their perspectives, and to share how this can be fixed. And guess what? Pay them for their time. Pay them for that involvement as a part of that conversation. I think you gotta, you know, really listen to, you know, those who are hurting internally before you can speak externally.
Are there any brands that you've seen or content creators that you've seen where they got canceled or were on the precipice of being canceled and they did a really good job of responding to it in an authentic way where, you know, they're not canceled anymore?
Well, I think a timely one, I'm not sure if it, I won't say it was the best cleanup, but it was a pretty fast cleanup. This week, you know, you saw the comments with Nick Cannon. He made some comments that were anti-Jew, essentially, and anti-Semantic.
Semantic.
Can't get the word out of my
yeah,
mouth?
Yeah, all good.
Semantic, yes. Thank you. And, you know, at first, his first response was, I stand by what I said. And, you know, he lost a network's relationship. And then, you know, within about 24 hours, he began to just have conversations with people, those who he really offended. And he came out with a corrected apology saying, hey, I was not aware of the ignorance to my comments. I believe they were true from how I understood it. Here's my perspective. I want to hear yours. And he came out with an apology. And now you're seeing his networks come back around him and say, hey, we support you. And you're seeing, you know, I think Fox said for his show that they're syndicating was, hey, we support you. Let's get you a season of learning and education, and we'll come back out with your show next year. And I think consumers, you're seeing the consumers come back around to supporting him. And even then, I think you're seeing, I call it sub-cancellation within that. Like, some people aren't excited about his apologies. Like, why did he apologize? And so I think he's even in a more complicated situation because people are like, hey, wait, no, we like what you said at first. Why are you apologizing now? So it's a funny way of approaching, but it was a good cleanup.
So, you know, one of the things that I, or one of the people I saw that was canceled was Jenna Marbles, and I don't know how well you followed that. But if you didn't follow it, essentially, you know, she wore blackface about like 10, 12 years ago in a YouTube video. And I don't want to debate the merits of that was good or bad because, you know, it was clearly not a smart decision. It was not a good decision. But what point should we be looking back? Like, someone did something 10 years ago. Someone did something, you know, 15 years ago. And, you know, is that too far back? Is it, oh, you know, they're with the community now and they're doing good things? Like where's the line drawn? When is it too much?
So I think the first thing I would say is we often communicate, let's say in a relationship, I can forgive, but I can't always forget, right? And so that I think is the first statement. Like, yes, I can say I forgive you for making the mistake, but that doesn't mean I'm gonna forget that you made that decision. In some things, I will say it's kind of my second point, some things are mistakes, purely accidental, and some are fully thought through. And there was a bias that was very visible at some point in time. And then the third point, you have to look at, you know, what have they done since? You know, have they made it a mission? Have they became an ally or an advocate since that part in time? Or does their allyship start now once we discover they had a bias at one point in time that was very obvious? And I think that's how you do it. I don't think there is a right or wrong answer to can the culture cancel? Because guess what? I don't cancel a person by myself. You don't cancel a person by yourself. The viewers don't cancel anyone individually. It's what they believe as a collective, you know, needs to be corrected. And that's the beautiful thing about social media. It's not about just one voice. It's a million and five voices.
So, do you think cancel culture has gone too far, or do you think it's just evolved over time? And that, you know, one of the dialogues or one of the arguments I always hear is like, oh, it's gone too far. But I think it was just different, right? Nobody called it cancel culture when people were protesting or rioting before the internet.
Yeah.
It was just a person. What do you think?
I mean, honestly, what it feels like, and I'll be honest, it feels like a privilege of someone who feels that I should have 100% ability to recover from something I did wrong. And that's not correct. You know, you have to be held accountable for anything. No matter what you do, there is an accountability for that. And if the people at large decide that your mistake was too heavy or too wrong or too ignorant, they have the right as the collective to say, you know what, we're not going to contribute to your success. Because the thing about cancel culture is, it's not saying, all right, I don't like you anymore, I'm not talking to you. It's, I'm not going to put my consumption, rather it's my viewership, which drives ad dollars, rather it's my purchase, which drives revenue. I'm going to say, I'm not contributing my ability to help you make money any further. That's all it is. If it happens with more than one person and you call that cancellation, then great. But back in the day, that was called a boycott.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. You know, people ultimately vote with their wallets on this, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they spend money on it. They're not canceling. If they're not, you know, they are canceled. One of the things that I know we've seen, I don't know how much you followed it, is the ESPN anchor who said inappropriate comments, or accused of saying inappropriate comments to a senator. And he was canceled sort of canceled, unclear what it was. But one of the things that's interesting that I've seen develop out of it is he's on a platform, ESPN, and people are trying to get him to move to Substack and move to this individual, creator platform. Do you see a lot of people sort of the way the internet has evolved, where they're almost allowing people who are canceled to continue to grow, where like they can move to like an individual platform? This has been one of the controversies with YouTube, where you have people who are really controversial being allowed to stay on the platform because they can monetize, but like they should be canceled. You know, at what point should the platform play a role in like, oh, this person should be canceled versus the audience?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a difference, and I'll try to explain it the best way that I can. Cancellation for blackface 15 years ago, or a wrong statement last year, whatever that might be, by a larger audience saying we don't agree with that, that's different from someone today spewing out bias on a platform and being racist or being anti-Semitic. And that's where the platform should jump in. It's if you're using our platform today to spew hate, to spew bias, to spew racism, spew whatever that might be, then this platform is not for that. There's every right for platforms to do that. If you want to do it without it, go create your own platform and build your audience. And that's what the KKK was for a bunch of years.
Yeah, and it's
unfortunately.
And it's really interesting on that point, because that's been a big controversy. I don't know if you followed Gab, in that like that's been a platform for hate or whatever you want to call it, but it's sort of it's masked itself as free speech. Do you think what are your thoughts on sort of these people and these folks co-opting this cancellation and saying it's against America, and then we're taking like what would you say to that? What would you say to brands that have to deal with those types of critics?
Well, the reality is, free speech does not mean I can say whatever that I want to say and change behavior however I want to do. Like, it's free speech until it steps over my rights as an equal human. And so when you begin to spew hate against me and you degrade me as a human, or you use your bias against me, that's when free speech becomes irrelevant. Like, that's not free speech anymore. And so I think it's important to understand that. I'm not an attorney by any means, but I do know to that point, my rights are my rights until they impede with your rights. And that's that conversation. If we're going to use platforms for it, platforms have every right to disband that, and if platforms choose to continue that on, that's up to the government to handle how they want to, stop, biases from spreading.
So, to end on a more optimistic note, do you
think,
do you think America's moving in the right direction, right? We're seeing Aunt Jemima, they're changing, they changed their name. Washington Redskins are changing their name. Looks like the Cleveland Indians are going to change their name. Uncle Ben's is going to change their name. Are we moving in the right direction? Where is the trend positive at least?
This, I think the best way to say it is right now, we're getting a lot of things that don't change my life. To be honest, painting Black Lives Matter on a street, changing a name, taking down a statue, yeah, that's great. I appreciate it. But that's not helping to break down any of the systematic racism or issues that are impacting me. Putting a sign on the street doesn't ensure that I get equal pay. Putting a sign on a taking out a monument doesn't ensure that Black women are paid equal to any other demographic. I think it's great energy. It's energy. It's excitement. But there needs to be some really practical things that are done to correct, 400 years of systematic oppression against Black people in this country. And so I think I'm excited about parts, but we got to do more.
So, I always ended on like, what's one lesson, you would do differently? But I think a better, more apt question is, if you were in charge of one of these companies, what would be one thing you would be doing differently that would make it more inclusive practice, but help you, right? Something that's really making a difference for someone like you.
Well, you know, the biggest thing, and I say it all the time, it's are we first hiring diverse? And so when you look at the, you know, the corporate base, if 18% of America is either 18 or 13% of America is African American, does my employee base represent that? Is 13% of my management, you know, diverse when it comes to being black? Are they paid equally to what they contribute in our organization? And so I think that's important. Whether it's black, Asian, Hispanic, white, or whatever, you know, first go create, I would literally go make a mandate that says our employee base, our leadership must be representative of their makeup in our country. It's harsh, but I would do it if I had to do it at this point in the time.
Got it. You know, thanks for that honest answer. I think that was very candid. So, you know, thanks for joining me today. You know, for listeners, for viewers on YouTube, where can they find you? You know, if they want to hire you, where can they hire you? Where else? You know, what are the other important
definitely
things?
Definitely. Yeah. So, you know, thanks again for having me, Ari. This was amazing. A great conversation. I really do appreciate these dialogues happening more and more in this time. I would say, you know, follow me on social at Jalen Bledsoe, J-A-Y-L-E-N Bledsoe, B-L-E-D-S-O-E, everywhere. The main website is bledsoecollective.com. If you want to get us as a consultant, it's flare.partners, F-L-A-R.partners, and we'll love to engage with you, work with you. I'll be honest, right now we're up 90% revenue because of all things America in 2020. So we would love to have you on and work with you this season.
Well, thanks everyone for joining. Really appreciate it. And until next time, everyone.
Perfect.